Final hour of Pinder and Steinberg, kicking off with our good friend Ryan S. Clark of The Athletic, who covers the Avalanche. My friend, have you observed the same thing I have, all the love the Avs are getting heading into this restart?
You know, it's interesting because when you look at the Vegas odd makers, they were the ones who've kind of been saying from the beginning, this is a team that had the potential to be a cup contender. And throughout the year, you've seen why, even with the injuries. And now that we're at the point of the restart, well, I guess technically we are, the Avalanche become a name that everybody just keeps talking about more and more because they're finally healthy. They have depth in the sense of what they can do with all four of their lines. They have a defense that, look, we know what Makar, Graves, Girard provides. We've seen Eric Johnson look stronger and better. Ian Cole's having one of the best years of his career. If they could just get a goalie situation figured out, then, yeah, that's one less thing they've got to worry about. But, yeah, it's a name that keeps coming up, as does one Nathan MacKinnon.
Well, and let's get into that. You've seen Nathan MacKinnon play all season long. He is a finalist for the Hart Trophy, is the most valuable player to his team in the NHL. What's I think we all know, but you watch him closer than anybody. What is Nathan MacKinnon's case for the Hart Trophy?
Well, there's a couple things. The first is, again, it goes back to the injuries. It's something every team has dealt with. And with MacKinnon, he's been able to do this on a team where he's lost Gabriel Landeskog and Mikko Rantanen and Kael Makar and Nazem Kadri and Andrei Burakovsky for extended periods of time. And what you've seen as a player, not only be the first player in Avalanche franchise history to record three straight 90-point seasons, which just seems inane to say out loud, but it's the truth. But you've seen him drive play regardless of who his line mates have been. So at one point in the season, he was on a line with Matt Calvert and Yanis Donskoy with the idea that, like, look, Donskoy and Calvert are going to work to feed MacKinnon possession, and it's his job to really do with it as he will. And you saw the Avalanche go 4-1 in that stretch before guys were starting to get healthy. But the other thing about MacKinnon is this, too. It's one of those things where he's a threat every time he's on the ice. When you look at how he drives play, primary assist, shots on goal, you name it. So if you're looking for an argument for, it would be all those things on top of the fact that he just seemingly gets goals every time they need him to grab them.
Yep, it's been an incredible year, and Flames fans saw he was already an elite player, and then they saw him take it to a next level in April of last year in that five-game series win for the Avs over the Flames. And he if I don't vote, but he would have gotten my number one vote for the Hart Trophy. Are you willing to divulge if he got your number one vote?
I'm willing to divulge that he was someone that was voted for, yes.
Okay, that's fair enough. And I appreciate that because I understand what the PHWA is trying to do and not have people start to piece things together. So I fully respect that answer. I do. And the other guy on the Avalanche that is up for a major award is the aforementioned Kael Makar, the Calgary product. And Ryan, we saw him enter last year's series between these two teams with no NHL experience. He jumped into the NHL playoffs and looked like he'd been playing for years. And yet, he still surprised me what he was able to do during this regular season because it's just unheard of for a rookie defenseman to do what he did. Did it surprise you, even though you saw him in that series against the Flames?
Yes and no. Just can you think back to the first 15 games where there were some struggles? You know, one that moment that stands out is their overtime against the Pittsburgh Penguins, they're on a power play. They make a mistake that allows to an odd man rush. Makar gets beat. Pittsburgh scores the game-winning goal. And then you start looking at the fact that he was, you know, switching defensive partners. But when you look at kind of his history, whether it was the Brook Bandits in the AJHL or at the University of Massachusetts, the first about 10 to 15 games of those, you know, inaugural seasons for Kael Makar, like, it's a feeling out process. And then once he's able to get to game 15, 16, 17, that's where you start seeing comfort. And you saw that this year, whether it be with his puck moving ability, whether it would be with the way he was able to score, how he got in a position. And it's wild because you think about all the things he did. And let's look at the moment against the Winnipeg Jets where he literally hesitated and brought a man to his knees before he scored. His college coach, Greg Carvell, said, you know, the thing I've told Kael is, you always try to look for the best shot. And you can do that at the collegiate level, but you can't really do that at the NHL because players are too quick, it moves too fast, and guys are going to pick up on your tendencies. But yet, you've seen Makar do that in a way that even when people know it's coming, they're still left helpless against it. Now, maybe it's something the league kind of figures out, but then again, this is also a league where people know Connor McDavid and Nathan MacKinnon are going to use speed, And sometimes there are things you can do to plan for it, and there are things that you just can't do because it's just part of who they are as players. So it's just that's what you've really seen from Cale Makar when he has been healthy.
Talking with Ryan S. Clark of The Athletic. He covers the Avalanche in Denver. Colorado's part of the round robin to start the return to play, which gets going tomorrow, and then they'll play one of the winners coming out of the qualification round. Give me your impressions of Avalanche training camp. What were some of your observations, Ryan?
For one, this is a team with four lines. You know, that's kind of been the narrative that's been discussed all year, Pat. But, I mean, you really saw that in camp because you think back to last postseason, the idea of Gabriel Landeskog, Nathan MacKinnon, and Mikko Rantanen being broken up, it was damned if you do, damned if you don't. Whereas if now you're seeing Burakovsky in the top line with MacKinnon and Rantanen, Landeskog on the second line with Nazem Kadri and Valeri Nichushkin. And that's kind of been the line that really sums up the progress this team has made because, you know, look, when you think about what that line could be in the sense of it's a two-way line that can check, that can generate production, that has size, that's willing to be physical. You know, it's all these things that you look at and say, this is what the St. Louis Blues and the Boston Bruins have done in the sense of why they're able to really play with anybody is because they have four lines that can play a speed game, can play a physical game, can play a technical game, can do all these different things. So that's been one part. Another has been, we mentioned Eric Johnson just a little bit ago, but to see the way he has looked throughout camp, there were some moments where he literally put men on skates. And, you know, Johnson has been one of this team's best skaters, but to see the way he looked and how fluid and effortless it was something that stood out. But, of course, you can't help but look at the future of this franchise. And this club saw Bowen Byram, Shane Bowers, and Connor Timmins, of course, all make the postseason roster. And with those three, those are players that look, we talk about the future, but the future could come as soon as whenever the 2020-2021 starts. Because, again, this is a team that, while it has a lot of talent, it has cap decisions to make, and they have 12 players who are going to be restricted and unrestricted free agents between those two classifications. So what they're able to see from guys like Bowers, Byram, and Timmins is going to be huge going forward.
Mm-hmm. You talked about, when talking about MacKinnon, all the different injuries the Avalanche faced at different times this year, and there were many of them. What's their health status like right now heading into the return to play? Everybody, for the most part, healthy right now?
Yeah, that's kind of the plan, and that's the case, because right now they're waiting to see what happens with Samuel Girard. He's not playing the exhibition game, but Jared Bednar said that he expected him back on the ice. And so once Girard is healthy, the belief is they're going to have a full complement of players. And if they do, then it's going to be a team that just, again, you know what they're going to look like. But in the event Samuel Girard is not healthy, then maybe that's where you plug Connor Timmins in. So you still have a puck mover for another puck mover. Just the difference is one has nearly 200 games of NHL experience. The other one only has two. So again, it's a drop off, but in this NHL where everyone's built to be young, it's something the Avalanche are able to do with Rasquel Eve because that's how they built themselves.
You mentioned the goaltending, and that's one area that might need to sort itself out. So what is the status? Tell us, give us a little bit of a deeper dive into what Colorado's goaltending situation looks like.
Sure, let's start with Philip Grubauer. Philip Grubauer is the incumbent that Flames fans saw last season for someone who could help this team win games or at least be consistent enough to keep them in games. Of course, the moment that stands out is that save he makes going side to side on the Avalanche's end that then turns into an odd man rush with a game-winning goal. And so with Philip Grubauer, the thing is he's had to deal with injuries, but he's dealt with inconsistencies. There were some months where his goals against average was about, again, in let's say the 2 to 2.3 range, but then there are other months where it was above 3 on top of the fact he was injured, which opens the door for Pavel Francouz. And so with Francouz, it was one of those things where no one really knew how this was going to look for him at the NHL level. He comes, he finds consistency, he wins games, and now you're in a situation where the guy who got you to the playoffs last year, while he's still a solid option, his backup, if you can even call him that anymore, won 21 games this year, had a higher save percentage and a better goals against average. And so if you're Jared Bednar in the Avalanche, you're left with what you think are going to be two really good options. It's just a matter of what option do you think can help you win, because this isn't last year like Varlamov and Grubauer, where there was almost an incentive for the Avalanche to see Philip Grubauer overtake
right.
Varlamov. Given Timmy and Varlamov was going to be, you know, a free agent at season's end. Whereas both of these guys are still under contract, but not only that, but just you're looking at who's going to operate this position, not so much for the playoffs, but what does it mean for the future? And look, it's going to be one of those things where both players have said, look, the competition is not with themselves. It's with whoever the Colorado Avalanche are playing. But if one of them gets the starting nod, whoever it is, and they go on a run and they help this team win a cup, then going into next year, it's going to be pretty clear what the defined roles are unless something else changes.
Because the Avalanche aren't playing in do-or-die games to begin with, they're still important, but they don't have the same stakes as the qualification rounds. How do you see Jared Bednar managing his goaltending and kind of making his decisions for the three games they're going to play?
Well, Bednar said even before this team flew up to Edmonton that they were going to use the exhibition game and the three-round robin games to really determine what the lineups are going to look like, but also the team's goaltending situation. So we saw in the exhibition game, Philip Grubauer received the start, and Pavel Francouz relieved him halfway through. Grubauer gives up two goals. Francouz gives up none. So let's say for that conversation point, maybe the advantage goes to Francouz. But then as far as what's going to happen going forward, that's where it's really going to be the key. Is it going to be he splits them over game? Does he let one guy play a whole game, another play next, and then they split him for a third? Who's to say? But the thought is he's going to be using these last three games to really fine-tune what he wants. So that way, whenever the Avalanche play, whoever they are going to play, they do have a starting goaltender in net with the idea that if there's a change that needs to be made, they have a backup ready and available who playing in an NHL playoff game may not be a new experience to them. Or if it is a new experience to them, in the case of Pavel Francouz, you can rely on the fact that, well, he's gotten you through difficult situations before, like when Philip Grubauer was injured.
Just your overall thoughts on the round robin and what the Avalanche are looking to accomplish in those three games they're going to play.
It's getting a test for how this is all going to look and how it's all going to work, because it's one thing to do it in training camp where it's a little bit more of a controlled environment, but it's another to do it against teams that are also good. And so when you look at the Blues, you look at the Stars, you look at the Golden Knights, I mean, those are all teams that make cases to be Stanley Cup contenders. Of course, if you look at what Vegas says Colorado and St. Louis are the two favorites above anybody else. And so with that being said, yes, you're using it as a litmus test maybe to see how you compare against those teams, but it's really just more about how do all these lines work? Because, again, you say the idea of Burakovsky, MacKinnon, and Rantanen, and naturally the thought is it's going to be goals. But the issue with those goals is this. Who is going to be the defensively reliable forward? Because for all the things Nathan MacKinnon does, there is still a two-way component of his game that is developing. Now, when you're in practice situations, you saw him be more vocal with guys like Andrei Burakovsky. And with Mikko Rantanen, you really saw him take an aggressive approach with stick checking. And so that being said, these are the things that they've got to get answered, and maybe they find out over the next three games.
We're in conversation with Ryan S. Clark of The Athletic. He covers the Avalanche. They'll be part of the Western Conference round robin when the NHL begins or restarts come tomorrow. Just a couple bigger picture questions for you, my man. And you know, we talked to you back in May when there were more important things going on in the world and hockey was not our primary focus. But I asked you at the end about just, you know, your thoughts on a return to play. And throughout all of this, throughout all of what has gone down since mid-March, how amazed are you that we're at this point and the league's actually restarting tomorrow?
In some ways, it's a little bit of a surprise, but in some ways, it's not, just because when you look at leagues that are able to make a bubble concept work, they've been able to provide a blueprint of, like, what you need to do in the sense of not only do you play at the same facility, but how do you make it work with hotel accommodations? And just from talking with different people, you know, within the Avalanche organization, it sounds like the way it's set up at the JW Marriott in Edmonton is they have their own floor. And to the point where they're being so safe about precautions, let's say if Jared Bednar needs to go speak with Brendan McNicholas, the team's PR person, they can either do it through Zoom or they can go out into the common area / player lounge, which is also an eating area. They can go into each other's rooms because the NHL is not allowing that. And so when you look at those sort of precautions and safeguards and the fact that they've gone to these stringent measures, like that's one of those things you look at and say, okay, this is how they've been able to make it work. Or better yet, you just look at when they had phase three going on at Pepsi Center. So Nazem Kadri explained it perfectly by saying, you know, what he would do is in a regular season game or practice or morning skate at Pepsi Center, rather, they would park in the players' parking lot, walk in, go through security, go about their business, and then get on the ice. Whereas if now he goes into the players' parking lot and he had to park at an acceptable socially distanced length from everyone else, every player had to do it. And then when you go through the door, you're doing temperature checks, you're going through security checks. There are certain parts of Pepsi Center that are cored enough that players are only allowed in. And then when they got in the dressing room for phase three, it was a situation where you could only have five or six players at most at a time. Then, of course, it opened up to 12. And then you had training camp. So, again, it's one of those things where the league appears like they've taken all the precautions necessary. But it's like anything. You can do all the precautions you want. You just never know about certain variables that are in play until they arise.
I see you were in the Altitude Television studios with the guys calling their game from afar earlier this week. Tell us about that rather unique experience.
Sure. So, you know, what it is, it's for people in Calgary who may or may not be familiar with the situation, the Avalanche have been in an interesting dynamic. So the long and short of it is they're in a television dispute, television contract dispute with Comcast. So Comcast carries two-thirds of the Denver market, which means two-thirds of Denver has not been able to watch the Avalanche or the Nuggets play this year unless they're in national TV. And even then, there is no guarantee. So with something like this, it was curious, how does that work knowing that you're in a bubble? And so got a chance to spend the day over at Altitude with Mark Mosier, Peter McNabb, and their control room staff there. And just it was spent kind of looking at how do they make this work from afar? Because, look, when you think about kind of international feeds and how it all works with European soccer when the Champions League was first a thing in North America, that's what people like Tommy Smith and Derek Ray used to do when they had the ESPN broadcast. So how does that work with hockey? And so what you learn is there's a lot of things that are out of their control. There are some things that are in their control. And for the things that are out of their control, they've got to learn to move on quick. But to watch it up close, I'll say this and stop, but like it was kind of this fascinating experiment where you hear Peter McNabb and Mark Mosier, they're in this room that, you know, looks like it'd be every sports fan's dream with all the amount of monitors in there. They do the broadcast and they're yelling and it's like, Jesus Christ, why are you yelling? You are 5-6 feet apart from one another. You're the only two in this room. There's no sound. But then you go downstairs to the control room and then you hear the audio from the game as well as their voices. And it's like, oh, it's made to sound like this natural feel like they are in Edmonton.
Yeah.
You can hear them over the sticks clacking and the ice skates shredding. So it's things like that that just as a viewer at home, you might listen and just go, oh, that's just part of it. But to see it in person, you're like, oh, these are the technical things that no one really thinks about.
Yeah, it was really cool to go see it on your Twitter. You can go check that out at Ryan_S_Clark on Twitter right now. Final question for you. I want to A, toss a little love towards your latest at The Athletic, and B, just your overall take on the current climate right now. As I mentioned, the last time we had you on was in the first few days of the Black Lives Matters protests and marches south the border for us, and you came on and we had I thought a really important chat with you. And then now that the NHL has come back, they have started their campaign We Skate for Equality, and you wrote about that at The Athletic. And today the Hockey Diversity Alliance, which has been spearheaded by Akeem Alou and a number of other current NHLers right now, have basically said that, you know, they don't really find what is happening right with the NHL to have a whole lot of legs or a whole lot of teeth. I'm just curious as to your overall observation about what we've seen here in the last 72 hours or so.
Tomorrow is going to be an interesting telling point for the NHL, because this league is now being assessed not only in its own merits but what others have done. So people know what to expect from leagues like the WNBA and the NBA because race and racism has been something that they openly discuss. But when you look at a league like NASCAR, which NASCAR has been the league of Confederate flags, it's been the league of, you know, hey, people saying it's not for me if you're a minority or whatever. It's a sport that has fully gone, you know, around and has supported openly a black driver and it has removed Confederate flags. And so for people who feel strongly about the NHL stance not being enough, they're going to look at those examples and say, what's the excuse? Now, with that comes the other side of this of people who just say, I don't really care about this subject. It's not my problem. Keep politics out of sports. So if you're the NHL, you now have to face a decision, which is, you know, you're going to keep someone upset regardless of what you choose. It's just a question of what side of this issue do you fall on. And so right now, it appears like they have taken a middle-of-the-road approach by keeping the We Skate For, with the idea that, okay, it could be used to just talk about racial injustice or COVID-19 or really kind of anything in between. And the point that critics have made of this program has been, you're not taking a stance, and this falls in line with a lot of what the NHL has done in the sense of how it tries to appeal to everyone. But it's like you and I discussed last time I was on. The NHL is a league that has shown one of two things. One, when it comes to its programming, it wants to be bright, family-friendly, and airy, and race and racism is not, it's not that. The second thing is, this is a league at the same time that has shown that it can wrap its hands around serious issues. Let's look at Bell's Let's Talk, the conversation on mental health. It is something that the league and the sport as a whole has really been able to have open discussions about. There have been conversations about gender and what we've seen at the All-Star Game with all-female broadcasts, the likes of Cammy Granato, Alexandra Mandricki, and really what you're seeing in a franchise like NHL Seattle, and that you're seeing more women get involved. Yes, these are steps, but there are people who say it's not enough. You see teams that do a Pride Night, but there are still people who say that's not enough. But when it comes to race, by comparison, it's been the one area the league has really struggled to sort of address in that same vein. So what happens tomorrow and what happens going forward, again, is going to be such a landmark moment considering it wasn't that long ago. You had white players like Tyler Seguin, like Blake Wheeler, Brian Boyle, you name it, really speak up about yep. these issues. And now comes the time for the question. How is the NHL going to handle race? And Saturday is going to be extremely indicative of what was learned.
Well said, my friend. And I hope that it's not kind of the middle of the road and very safe approach to it. I hope that it isn't. But I think at the very least, it wouldn't be a surprise if it were that. Because of what you just said and what the history has shown. So we shall see, and you're right, it will be 100% telling. Well said, my friend. It is outstanding to chat with you again. Enjoy covering the Avalanche, my man. It's going to be a very strange but very fun next number of weeks and months. Thanks for doing this today.
Hey, enjoy covering the playoffs from a province where you can be there, but you can't exactly walk inside the facility. Would imagine that's kind of got to be a little bit strange to have it, again, not that far away, but you have to chill out in Calgary because these are the rules.
It's weird, but I'll take it over nothing at all. I'll say that much.
Hey, no one can blame you there.
Thanks, Ry. Talk soon, my man.
Hey, you got it, buddy. Take care.
Ryan S. Clark.